Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 213, recording this on 20th of April 2017. It's been a couple of weeks since the last podcast. Mr. Rafe Blanford has had a bit of a holiday, and also he's a bit busy at work this week. So we've got another stand-in, Anthony Fear, who's been on a few times before, but last time a couple of months ago. So hi, Anthony.
Hi, Steve. Nice to be back.
Yes, I gather you've been updating your review of the Alcatel Idol 4S with Windows 10. So take us through the bullet point summary. I know you did a write-up on the site, but give us sort of three or four bullet point summary of what you think of the device after several months.
Sure. So what I would say is, you know when a device has made an impact on you when you can't put it down or you keep coming back to it.
Okay.
And I have to say the Idol 4S has done that. I tried to switch back to my 950 XL recently because I thought I had an issue with the Idol, and I missed it. I really did.
Okay.
So I resolved what I thought was a charging issue, and I'm back to using it as my daily driver. The thing that I didn't expect is it's the speakers, the external speakers.
I told everyone.
I used to listen to you talking about these external speakers on phones, and I just never got it. For the longest time, I was just used to think, this is just such a non-issue, a loudspeaker on a mobile phone. But now that I've experienced it, I just can't live without it. I absolutely hate the sound on the 950 now. I just can't stand it.
Absolutely. It's like having a good camera on a phone back in 3, 4, 5 years ago when you first had, for example, a Nokia N95 5 megapixel camera image, and you could take that wherever you were. All of a sudden, you couldn't go back to rubbishy, non-focusing 2 megapixel shots. All of a sudden, your vista opened up. And once you've had good audio on a smartphone, even if you think you didn't need it in the first place, then thereafter, podcasts and music and YouTube, Netflix, and anything you might actually put out, speakerphone calls, sat-nav instructions, everything on a lesser phone just sounds somewhat disappointing. And so you can't go back once you've heard the best.
No, absolutely, and that's exactly been my experience. I just love these loudspeakers on the Idol. So the other things with the device, I mean, it's a beautiful build quality. It really is. Oh, and there it is right now.
Very loud, nice and clear.
The other thing is it's a beautiful build quality. It is a bit of a fingerprint magnet, but that doesn't bother me. Funnily enough, I was just talking with a colleague yesterday who wanted to use one of my spare Windows phones, and the one he had his eye on was the Idol. So I actually gave him the 950 XL, and he said, well, "What about that one? Oh, that's a really nice phone." So it is. I mean, I think it's as good as any other flagship handset out there, looking at least. Anyway, it's beautifully well made. And the screen, I was not expecting the screen to impress me because of the lower resolution, but the colors and the colors are just so vibrant, not overly saturated like on a Samsung device, but they're just really defined. They're just really clear, and the blacks are super, super black. So because of that, I never missed the higher resolution screens on either the X3 or the 950. I don't notice pixelation ever. And again, when I go back to one of those devices, I miss the vibrant colors on the Idol. So I find myself coming back to the device more and more.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that you're not using the so-called VR portion of it. I know you've got a VR visor in the box with the Idol 4S, but I'm guessing with 1080p, it really doesn't make sense, especially with the choice of apps on Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah, so I mean, as a novelty, it's kind of interesting. I don't think it's there's certainly less apps than there are on other platforms. But for me, it's just not practical to sit and try and watch a movie with a headset on. Some of the games were reasonable enough. I wasn't bothered by pixelation, so I didn't find the screen held it back. I just found the whole VR experience holds it back. And in particular on the Idol, I think I feel there's some kind of design flaw on their VR headset. They didn't quite tweak it or test it properly. As I explained in my my second part of my review, there are issues with the touch buttons on the VR headset not working correctly. With the handset inserted into the headset the correct way around. Now, if you put it in upside down, the buttons work fine, but of course the image is upside down. So there's now what I did find as a fix to that is that if you I actually used a bit of tape in the end to put extra pressure on the handset to sort of push it further into the headset. Just a probably not even a millimeter, but it made a world of difference and made everything fully functional, but a little impractical, you know, a bit of duct tape on a headset. So I was able to experience most of the apps without too many issues. Again, though, it's not something I would suggest people go and buy for the VR experience. It's nice that they include it in the box, but otherwise I'd ignore that.
Yeah, my gut feel is that because Alcatel designed this for the Idol 4S for Android, which had a higher resolution screen and presumably a slightly different arrangement of internal components in terms of magnetometer and so forth, that everything, that visor you've got there in the box was designed for the Android version and made more sense on the Windows 10 mobile version with a low resolution screen and slightly rejigged internals. All of a sudden, things just don't line up and work properly. So I think you got the bum end of that deal.
I see, yeah, that makes sense. Yep, that would explain it.
I did see that T-Mobile, certainly in America, USA, have stopped selling this device now, or at least winding down sales. I mean, it's been on sale there for, what, about 4 or 5 months now?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It was out in the US maybe a month or two. That's right, because I believe T-Mobile had the exclusive for a month, 30 days, 60 days, and after that it was released into Canada. So it's probably getting on there for 4 months or so.
Is it still for sale in Canada?
Yes, it is, yeah, through the Microsoft Store, yep.
Okay, so it's not quite wound down yet. We still don't know yet whether we're going to get an Idol, whatever it's going to be called, 4S Pro in Europe. That was the word on the street at Mobile World Congress. Whether they're taking fright from what T-Mobile have decreed to do in America, we just don't know. And I suspect that, to be honest, if they keep the specs the same, a 1080p screened, quote, flagship, coming out with Windows 10 Mobile in Europe in mid-2017 might just be seen as a bit of an anachronism. So let's hope that if it does come out, then at least it's a quad HD screen and they update the chipset as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with just a reduction in price. I think as long as they target it as a mid-market handset and price it so, it could still sell.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, watch this space on that one, and thank you for your continued review parts. Do fill in the gaps again in a few months' time if you're still using it, and let us know what you think. What other devices in the mobile world are really tempting you? I know you're a confirmed Windows 10 Mobile and Microsoft fan in terms of ecosystem and applications, so I'm guessing you do keep your eyes open at what else is happening in the wider mobile world.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, of course. Yes, I do. So the S8, of course, is with its decks, is looking rather interesting at the moment.
Yeah, that was curious. I think we might have spoken about it with Rafe on the last podcast. DeX seems to me like almost like a limited hack of Android onto the larger screen, whereas very few people seem to be appreciating that Continuum is not just a hack of Windows 10 Mobile onto a larger display. It's that, but much, much more, because they are the same applications, exactly the same UWP apps that you'd run on a tablet or a desktop or a laptop or a HoloLens or Xbox and so forth. I don't think people quite realise that Samsung's version is a very limited subset of what I think Continuum is.
No, absolutely, I agree. But I think Microsoft, unfortunately, they failed to cash in on these initiatives or on these features. So, you know, just yesterday when Microsoft released a new, was it the Authenticator app? And so on iOS and Android right now, you don't no longer need passwords. It'll send a push notification to those devices and you can log in without a password. They haven't made that feature available for Windows Phone, Windows Mobile, and their reasoning was it's less than 5% market share. Now, if Microsoft can't be bothered to, you know, to use their one of many tools, you know, they have the iOS bridge where they could maybe recompile the iOS version into a UWP, or they can't be bothered to write UWP apps, then why should anybody else? And so I agree with you, the Continuum is a fantastic feature, but I fear that Samsung's late entry will gain more exposure and will ultimately gain more traction if Microsoft don't do something about it.
Yeah, I think I said to Rafe on the last podcast, I didn't think Samsung's decks would go very far either, because I think it's aimed, the whole point about Continuum is at least it's aimed at the right market, even if it's not maybe taking the world by storm, at least it's aimed at businesses and enterprises, whereas DeX is clearly a business-related feature, but the Samsung Galaxy S8 is clearly a consumer smartphone, so I'm not entirely sure that there's that much overlap there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, interesting, but what I would say is with Samsung is they tend to throw things at the wall,
and marketing
see
money.
What sticks. Yeah, absolutely. And then they run with it. So, I mean, Samsung for years has had multi-window support that never really caught on until all of a sudden Google built it into the Android system. And I wonder if this is going to be something similar.
Yeah, I suspect that the authenticator support will happen. I think just Microsoft pushed it down to the bottom of their to-do list. It also, let's be fair, something like an authenticator runs at a fairly low level in an OS, and you have to specifically program it. You can't just sort of knock it up in a 5-minute UWP app. So I'm guessing this is on their radar. They just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I hope so. I guess I'm just a little disappointed that there isn't an emphasis or a push from Microsoft to say, okay, you know, anything that we release, we really should be releasing a UWP app at the same time.
Yeah, quite a bit of their stuff does appear for all platforms. For example, Microsoft To Do launched last night, as we record mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. on the Friday, and that is not only cross-platform Windows 10 Mobile, iOS, Android. You can also just access it on the web, and it's basically a Microsoft To Do list on steroids, cross-platform service. I think it's rather well done. Do you have a chance to look at that?
I did, actually. Yeah, I downloaded it straight away. Actually, on my phone, it downloaded as Project Cheshire, which I think was the, was the original project name. But yeah, I did have a look around. It's not quite as fully functional as Wunderlist, which Microsoft bought. But I guess they want to re-architect it rather than just rebrand. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops.
Yeah, quite often when big companies take over smaller companies' products and they eventually repackage them, and the hardcore users of the former product, they complain, oh, you haven't got feature A and feature B and feature C. But quite often it's the big company is actually simplifying and examining the product in a lot more detail than the smaller company did, who were just basically adding features that anyone wanted. And I suspect Microsoft has taken the view, let's see which features 99% of users are going to use, and the 1% of power users, they should go off and use a project management tool or something.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think this will get there. It's certainly a nice looking first attempt.
Yeah. Did you see all the hoo-ha last weekend, the Easter weekend, over updates and doom and gloom around the net?
Yes, I did. Yes, and I was following your article and the raft of comments that it produced.
I was hoping to have a nice, quiet Easter weekend. It didn't quite work out that way. Just to take in order kind of some of the worries and things that have happened, the fracturing of the Windows 10 Mobile timeline, if you like, in terms of the fastering updates, a different build numbers now to PC. Microsoft say it's because they're re-engineering one core for PC. My explanation, my reading, is that the two are going to be kept in lockstep in terms of the things that need to be kept in lockstep. But they're doing such under-the-hood reworkings of one core for PCI for the x86 processors, and of course with an eye on porting all of that to ARM processors, that they don't want to risk breaking everybody's the existing remaining Windows 10 Mobile users' builds in the meantime when they're doing these major kernel changes. Does that ring true to you? Say what you think.
I want it to be true. I suspect that if Microsoft were really planning to just let Windows Mobile die, they wouldn't have even bothered with this step. So I do believe that there is some positive light at the end of the tunnel, and that this isn't necessarily a doom and gloom move. And there have been some snippets of information coming out talking about devices with Windows Mobile ARM 64. Or references to Windows ARM Mobile 64, Windows Mobile ARM x86, which is slightly bizarre. But So it would appear that there is more going on behind the scenes than just let's break this off and put it into maintenance.
Yeah, we just don't know. And what people have called Redstone 3, of course, there is no official Redstone 3. Microsoft has never talked about it. That's just us extrapolating from Redstone and Redstone 2. Mm-hmm. But as far as I can see, that they're going to carry on tweaking Windows 10 Mobile up to a certain date. What that date is might be the end of this year, might be the start of next year. At some point, of course, we know that they're basically going to integrate both the desktop and the mobile SKUs into one shell. It's adaptable across all screen sizes, and the whole shooting match will run on ARM, just as the phones are doing now. The real caveat, the sting in the tail, is probably, and the thing that Microsoft always gets slammed for, is that they quote, leave older users behind, i.e. people who have bought hardware, for example, let's say a Lumia 950, as you've done, or even an Alcatel Idol 4S, and come whenever it is, November this year or March 2018, they say, right, that's it, Windows 10 and ARM is now a thing, we've got a new service phone or whatever they want to call it, it's all seen or dancing, we've got manufacturers on board to build cheaper versions, this is, you know, the Windows 10, the portable version, and, oh, by the way, anybody with older hardware running Windows 10 Mobile, even the quote flagships, there's no direct upgrade path. I suspect that's what they're going to have to say, because it will be kind of a step change in their ambitions and also the internals. Would you be horribly abandoned that you're the then 2.5-year-old 950 and your 1.5-year-old Idol 4S were not fully upgradable to this next gen?
Yeah, you know, I think the issue is that the last few people, the last few fans that are running Windows Mobile are quite passionate, and they feel abandoned and not fully supported by Microsoft, and so they're quite vocal. But in all honesty, you know, a 2-year-old device is, in this day and age, is probably as much as you can hope for. If support for that 2-year-old device is as much as you could hope for from any manufacturer. You know, things have to be allowed to retire, and we have to allow the new things in with new feature sets and functionality. So whilst it is disappointing, I understand it, and I think it's just a fact of mobile devices in this day and age.
And let's face it, as a fan of the larger phones, at least someone who's not afraid to use things like 950 XL, if Microsoft do bring out, or third parties bring out, a quote Surface phone or similar, or phablet running Windows 10 on ARM in March 2018, you're going to buy one, I'm going to buy one, and wouldn't actually shed too many tears for our 2-3-year-old phones in a drawer, which would be a shame because they won't be fully upgradable, but they're not going to stop working. They'll still be able to be used and played with and perhaps passed on to a partner or children or extended family or even sold as a fully working device. These devices aren't going to suddenly stop working, and we'll be very happy with your shiny new toy.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree.
other storms in a teacup over last weekend. There was a leaked list of models that would officially get Windows 10 Mobile Creators Update, and that didn't include the Snapdragon 800 powered devices. With the Lumia 930 and 1520 back in the day, where they were genuine flagships with the very latest Snapdragon chipsets. And they ran really, really fast on Windows Phone 8.1. They still run pretty darn smoothly on Windows 10 Mobile, I have to say. I've got a 930 in front of me right now. But the 930 is something like 2.5 years old. The 1520 is going to be over three years old, I believe. And that really is an eternity in the mobile world. I can see why Microsoft are dropping it. They're not dropping these devices from the, quote, official list, because they don't run the operating system fast enough. They clearly do. They're dropping them because they're using chipsets that basically aren't being tested internally. Microsoft have to reduce the chipset pool that they're testing against and optimizing for. And okay, some people will get left off the bottom, but the release preview will work just fine on these devices. At some point, the release preview may stop getting updates when Microsoft deletes the Lumia 930 and 1520 from their provisioning config.txt file over on their servers. But at the moment, there's no reason why people who are enthusiasts can't just put that on and be happy, and that will give those devices another year or so of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I have a 1520, a nice bright yellow one still. And I still find myself using the device occasionally. It doesn't feel particularly slow for a device of that age. Again, maybe if you own one and you're not quite ready to upgrade, disappointing. But as you said, Steve, I think it's quite understandable this day and age, things have to move on, and unfortunately, old devices have to be left behind.
Yeah, the final storm in a teacup was that people were saying, oh, and to back us up on our conspiracy theory paranoia, the upgrade advisor from Windows Phone 8.1 has stopped working, so Microsoft has clearly disabled that and is abandoning everybody. And I said, no, come on. The upgrade advisor is still in the store. The fact that it's not working at the moment, this is clearly a server glitch over a holiday weekend when everyone at Microsoft has gone home to be with their families. Wait until they come back on Monday and they'll fix it. And they did. So, and I have tested that with several devices here. I've taken them right back using the device recovery tool from Microsoft, back to 8.1, run the upgrade advisor this week, and bang, they're back on Windows 10 mobile. So it all still works, and I think sometimes the enthusiasts take their enthusiasm slightly too far, and the moment anything stops working, they instantly see doom and gloom and maldoing from Microsoft's part, and I don't think it's always justified.
No, absolutely. No, I saw that the update on your post there, and I'm sure that helped calm a lot of nerves around the world. Let me ask you a question, Steve. Yeah. Why do you think Microsoft hasn't been a bit more vocal or open about their plans for mobile?
I think that they know full well that their mobile community is relatively small, and that the people who are keen on it, they're keeping their ear to the ground, and they're keeping well into the loop anyway. They don't necessarily need to be told every single thing that's happening, because quite often, let's face it, the likes of you and I find out a lot of this stuff before an awful lot of the Microsoft's PR people and the people writing the blogs. Now, if we could have, you know, Terry Myerson or someone like that's actually on tap, then that will be really handy. But a lot of the time, that most of our community does seem to know what's going on. Microsoft has clearly got a long-term vision. I mean, that's whether we agree with it or not, and let's face it, myself and Rafe and yourself have been fairly critical in the past of some of the decisions that have been made over hardware, software, layoffs, whatever. But Microsoft is clearly working to a vision of Windows 10 everywhere, on every single platform, every single form factor. And there is this gap of 2 or 3 years while they're re-engineering everything. And the latest step in that is re-engineering the biggest operating system on the planet. Mm-hmm. On laptops, tablets and desktops, which is Windows or Windows 10, re-engineering the whole of that for an entirely different architecture, namely ARM. That's a huge last step, but that is actually the last step. Once they've done that, then you've got Snapdragon 835 processor chipsets, which run on basically on everything from phones upwards. In fact, I think I've seen them in sort of Internet of Things leaked for later this year. So basically everything from one inch up to the biggest... all-in-one, all running the same chipset, all with exactly the same operating system, with the same applications. So this is a big vision, and I'm guessing, look, while you're actually making something large, you know, you're building a boat in your backyard, for example, Anthony, perhaps, or in your case, I don't know, a snowmobile. and while you're building it, which takes 3 years, you don't necessarily want to keep leaking out, here's how I've got so far, and this is the latest bit I've bolted on. You want to say, look, I'm doing a snowmobile, come back in March 2018, and I'll drive it out of the garage and amaze you. I think we're kind of in that in-between stage.
I see your point. I guess the argument I would put against that is something like Project Scorpio, where Microsoft wanted to head off a mass exodus of Xbox users to PlayStation 4. So they announced their intentions well ahead of time. Just to keep everybody calm, keep everybody on side. And, you know, we're still talking about it. We're still waiting for that device. I can't help but feel that a similar announcement around mobile would be beneficial.
I think at Build 2017, which is coming up, I think next month sometime, they've leaked it with an education tag. So clearly they're announcing this Windows 10 Cloud, which basically, think Chromebook. It's basically a Windows 10 with the Edge browser and store apps, but with no x86 compatibility. So in addition to that, then, I suspect they are going to announce a couple of new items of hardware in the Surface family. Maybe a Cloudbook, I think somebody called it, running, you know, an ARM chipset, but this Windows 10 Cloud. That's a clear possibility. It may be aimed at the education market, may be aimed at the budget market. People have rumoured that something like a Surface Mini might be end up being what we have been calling Surface Phone, which is basically a 6 to 7 inch mobile PC that can do telephony as well, even though you might, you know, feel a tiny bit silly if you use it as a dedicated phone up to your face. But let's face it, we used to see people with 6-inch phones holding them up to their face at the moment. So, and for most business use, you're actually going to be using a headset or some kind of a speakerphone system, aren't you, for calls. So there are possibilities, and I'm wondering whether they might bring all of their plans forward in terms of hardware and dazzle people with some of their hardware designs, concepts and prototypes, and in 1 month's time, as you say, and maybe that will head off the voracious zombie hordes that are clamoring for doom and gloom.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, fingers crossed. Let's hope that's the case.
I am the eternal optimist, and as I need to be, really. You have to be an optimist, yes, otherwise you would have given up months ago, if not years ago. And lots of UWP apps, by the way. I know you're a fan of new applications. You mentioned Microsoft To Do just now. Also, Microsoft Flow. There's another big Microsoft property. There's a new UWP app linking all the different cloud services in your life together. And this one seems very comprehensive. I don't know whether you saw it.
I did. I managed to get in on the preview program, so I've got that on my idle for us. Yeah, so I've been playing around with that. It's not quite as comprehensive as something like if this then that, but it's got some decent enough features, and I've been able to automate a couple of tasks like synchronizing calendars across different devices, and I've been playing with it. I'm finding it useful.
It does seem to me that I was kind of having to stretch for examples in my brief writer. Is that the most useful thing? I mean, it's synchronizing a couple of calendars seems like something that should happen totally automatically at OS level. surely there's going to be some kind of vital, unique selling point, something a killer feature here.
Well, I think the thing is, once that tool is in your arsenal, then you will find more and more use cases for it. So I know some of our customers are using it to automatically grab FTP files, dump it into SharePoint sites, send out an email afterwards. And so they're using quite complex automation tasks with it, not necessarily on the mobile, although they could access it that way. But they are, as they use it more and more, they're finding more and more use cases for it. So I don't have that kind of need in my day-to-day life. Synchronizing calendars is about as complex as it gets, but I know that it is being used more heavily by users in business, and that's Microsoft's prime target audience. It seems to be a useful application.
Yeah, and in fairness, in the description for Microsoft Flow, they do mention business workflows. This is not something the man in the streets can be playing with, I suspect.
Exactly. I did immediately go to see if I could turn my lights on, turn my smart lights on with voice activation. But I guess those sort of consumer type uses are not built in yet.
Yeah, I remain to be convinced by a lot of this Internet of Things. And even if this, then that, I'm sorry, I just can't see a reason why that needs to exist outside of the enterprise and business, where you have certain things that have to be automated and which are properly configured and polished and tested and programmed by an IT department that's getting paid to do so. So they do a damn good job. In the consumer place, it's just people fiddling with things, and that is never a good recipe for security and things working long term.
No.
Did you see that I'd had to split the Windows Phone/10 mobile application directory? It was getting too big, too huge, and it was basically breaking the site. So I've now split this curated application directory, the best apps, into two: general apps and then photo and media applications. So hopefully you saw that pop up in the AAWP Universal app as well.
I haven't checked the Universal app. I tend to look on the website, but I did notice that change, yes. So it's nice to know that there are still so many applications that you can't put it all in one directory.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, all those all those Windows Phone 8 applications, the vast majority of them do still run very well on Windows 10 Mobile. Of course, the developers, some of them have now gone off to other platforms or retired, or some of them are now 3 or 4 years old. So it'd be nice to using a program that you know is being actively developed. I know my daughter's a big fan of of modern bands that are still gigging. And I try and interest her in old music, really good music, but bands who are now long in the tooth or retired, or in some cases died. And of course, she's no interest whatsoever because they're not active. And I think it's a bit like that with applications. If you have the choice of, for example, running Next Gen Reader, which is an excellent Windows Phone 8.1 app on your Alcatel Idol 4S, or running FeedLab, which is a modern, actively developed, being updated UWP app, you probably run the latter simply because you know you're going to get something new in terms of features and you get support in case it ever breaks.
Yeah, I feel myself falling into that trap quite frequently. My podcaster or catcher, I should say, my podcatcher of choice was always Pocket Casts because of the multi-platform support. But I've noticed recently that there have been less and less updates, and I actually reached out to them on Twitter and they confirmed that they were no longer actively supporting the Windows 10 mobile version. So I found myself giving up on that app and looking for another one. And I'm glad I did, actually, because I found Grover Pro.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome podcatcher and has now been my choice on all my devices. So in some ways, I'm glad that I found out Pocket Cast was no longer being supported. But it is disappointing, especially when they leave an app just to linger in the store.
It's ironic in Pocket Cast's case, because in the description, when they first launched it on Windows Phone 8.1 back in, 3 years ago now, in the description they said, "You think we're just going to launch this and not keep it updated and supported? Well, you've got another thing coming because we're going to blah, blah, blah." And of course, what did they do? They left it to stagnate and did absolutely nothing with it. So shame on Shifty Jelly, really. She shouldn't have launched it in a buggy state if they weren't prepared to follow through with it. But as you say, there were about 20 different podcatchers on Windows Phone 8.1, and there are still about 4 or 5 really good ones on as universal Windows apps that are just for Windows 10 mobile and with all the design language and Continuum support. So people aren't, you know, there's the sport for choice, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As I said, I'm glad because it forced me to look for some new apps for some of my core requirements. Yeah. And I found some excellent applications and they become my go-tos. So yeah, there's still an active, community, an active, app developer community, and I'm still enjoying it.
It really annoys me on some other podcasts that I won't name, but then they say, "Oh, of course, the UWP was a complete disaster. There aren't any UWP apps," they say. That's the quote. And what, are you absolutely insane? Yes, I agree that on a desktop, people don't run UWP apps because they're used to doing everything in the browser. But there are an awful lot of people on tablets and smartphones in particular running Windows 10 mobile that use UWP apps every single day. On my Lumia 950 XL, almost everything I do is in a UWP app. And sounds like you're the same with the Idol. So UWP isn't a total disaster. There are UWP apps, and it is kind of the way forwards.
Yeah, I agree, and I think unfortunately Microsoft doesn't get a great deal of love from the press and the popular media. An example would be, you know, iris scanning. I heard on a recent podcast, which we won't name, talking about how wonderful this was on the new Galaxy devices and and you know, you just find yourself yelling at the screen, "We had this years ago, come on, you know, this is not new." But hey ho, such is life.
It was ironic in that sense because it when the iris scanning came out on the 950 a year and a half ago, it was a bit slow, and if you wore varifocals in particular, it didn't work. And I said so at the time, and of course, 18 months later, Samsung comes out with the exact same feature, iris recognition, the Galaxy S8, and people saying, "Well, it's a bit too slow, and it doesn't work if you've got varifocal glasses." And I think, we had this 18 months ago, and nothing's really changed. There's no way iris recognition can be as instant as a fingerprint scanner, and I think people should just get used to that. It is a shame, of course, that the 950 XL don't have a fingerprint scanner, and I'm guessing that's one of the features you do kind of like on the Idol.
I do appreciate the fingerprint reader when it works. The Idol one is a little finicky, I think probably because the sensor's just a tad too small. So you find yourself kind of using this Spock-like grip to make sure that you always grab the phone in a certain way so that your finger always presses it. So, but you know what? I was actually a fan of the iris scanner on the 950 XL. That's something I miss on the Idol. because I tend to put the phone down when I'm working. So I will still look at the notifications coming in. And then, of course, if I want to unlock, what I find is that with no iris scanner and I don't want to pick the phone up, I just end up going back to a PIN code. So, so the fingerprint readers are nice to have, but it's not essential, in my opinion, especially if it's on the back.
Okay. Going back to something we mentioned earlier, just as the last item for this podcast, we have a reader's letter in. It's on the kind of subject we mentioned in terms of what Microsoft should do in terms of hardware. So I wanted to read this out. We've been teasing this letter from Keith Bartlett for a while. He says, an idea for you and the team to discuss. In the past, we, the consumers, have got annoyed when we haven't received updates. For example, when Windows Phone 7 was not upgradable to Windows Phone 8 because of hardware constraints. Yet the Lumia 900 had only just been announced and was already obsolete. And I believe I said that at the time. Keith says, so perhaps Microsoft are right, not releasing a new flagship Lumia 960 or whatever this year. I think Keith wrote this letter at the end of the start of January this year, as it wouldn't be able to receive Windows 10 on ARM. Or should they have released a phone to keep consumers happy, an interim device, another, quote, 900 series? Now, I guess his thought there is that should there be an interim device? And I'm latching onto that and saying, if they did do an interim device, let's just say, for the sake of argument, they released a Lumia 960 in 3 or 4 months' time as a, not so much for consumers or even enthusiasts, but as being a testbed device that they could then start developing Windows 10 on ARM and their eventual vision. Are they really going to go from nothing at all to a, quote, Surface phone or Windows 10 on ARM mini PC in one step without any kind of testing in the enthusiast community? What insider builds can they produce, and what will those insider builds run on? My gut feel is they won't release a Lumia 960, Keith, but I think we might well see a revised Elite X3. We saw something at Mobile World Congress. And if you can imagine the Elite X3, which is very expensive and very highly spec'd and all sorts of enterprise features, including the Pogo pins and so forth, if you strip that down a bit but keep the core chipset the same and keep most of the internals, you can probably get something that's relatively cheap to produce and yet would be a valid test bed at 6-inch screen for that, you know, next generation software, in which case there might be a possibility that we get to see insider builds for Windows 10 on ARM, whatever that gets called, Redstone 3, Redstone 4, but on something that we can physically hold in our hand and get involved in giving feedback to Microsoft. Does that sound in any way possible?
I will say that the X3 is the only thing that gives me hope right now, because I can't believe that HP would have been so invested in X3 and the Windows 10 mobile ecosystem to release the handsets and the expansion devices, and if they weren't 100% confident that Microsoft wasn't about to abandon this platform. So I have to believe that HP were given some kind of insight, and that's why they invested in the platform and not that long ago. So yes, I totally can see that HP is, if anyone is going to release that device, then it will be them. And they did say that the device they showed off at, was it Mobile World Congress? I say yeah. Showed off. That yeah. They had
in a glass case
at the back of the booth was not there by accident. So, read into that what you will. But I still see that as a positive sign.
Yes, yeah, shades of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy there. Yes, it was displayed in a locked toilet down to, in a basement down to some, with broken stairs and a sign on the door saying, beware of the leopard. Yes, that sort of displayed.
exactly.
They were also showing off a revised laptop, which is bigger and sleeker, so and with some standard USB-A ports as well. My gut feel is that HP are on an annual product release cycle. Now, this time last year, we're just starting to see the first... We'd seen in Mobile World Congress 2016, the Elite X3, of course, shown off. But it took 6 months, really, for it to come out fully across the world and be available for people like you and I to play with. Ditto the laptop was even later, of course. assuming HP is on an annual release cycle, then we're kind of due for them announcing something about the Elite X3 and a revised laptop over the spring and summer 2017. So I wouldn't put it past them to have some kind of minor announcement. I don't think it warrants an event, goodness me, in the Windows 10 mobile world, but certainly a post and devices becoming available. And advertising it for businesses. And Microsoft, of course, very happy because it will be a new device and one which is future-proof. For example, if it runs a Snapdragon 835 chipset, then that may well be something they can use as a base device for testing, you know, the future of Windows 10 on mobile. So that might work out very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I suspect that Microsoft would let HP lead the way with their device before... a Surface phone is announced probably later next year. But, you know, I was I'm secretly hoping for, I don't think it'll happen, but, you know, that the lap dock for me was just a little bit too expensive, and I couldn't help but wonder if Windows Cloud devices might have a continuum type connectivity, not the wireless, because I find that just a little too laggy, but if they could build that into those devices, that might give us a significant boost.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to these Windows Cloud or Cloudbooks, whatever they end up being called, because I mean, even the Surface, you know, Pro and the Surface devices, they're still very expensive bits of kit, really, and for the likes of one's family and partners and extended family, you really can't say, look, the computer you need in your life is a £900 or £1,100 hybrid computer. You want to be able to say to them, look, it's £250 and you won't get viruses and you won't get ransomware and there's nothing to worry about, exactly as you would with a Chromebook. And once they produce these Cloudbooks or whatever they end up calling them at a reasonable price, I think Windows 10 in its cloud variant, I think it'll take the world by storm. I think all the geeks who are and the podcast are saying, no, this is not just for education, this is not going to take off at all, I think they're completely missing the wider picture that people all over the world are getting utterly fed up with being hit by viruses and malware and ransomware and things going wrong and x86 apps that don't work properly and device drivers, and all of a sudden they'd have a version of Windows 10 just stripped down to its basics, running just things that have been authenticated and approved and with nothing to go wrong. And I think that would be a huge step forward for Windows, quite in parallel to all the other stuff we're talking about with mobile.
Yeah, absolutely. I do too. But what I think is going to happen is that Microsoft may release a Surface-type Cloudbook device, but it'll be expensive. I think the Surface brand is top-end devices. I think they would spoil that if they released a $250 Cloudbook, but I think what they will do is allow their partners to make those $250 devices, and you can still buy the Hero Microsoft Surface Cloudbook if you want. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a Microsoft Cloudbook would be, I don't know, $700, and Dell and HP and a few others and Acer would have their own versions at $300, $400, which would make a lot more sense. Yep. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Anthony, for filling in at a very last minute. So it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on again.
And we will no doubt hear more from you as 2017 rolls on. But bye for now.
Bye now.